This webcast is made possible in part by support from the listener members of the Classical Network, WWFM and WWFM.org. Thank you for your support.
Cadenza, winner of the Deems Taylor Virgil Thompson Award for Broadcasting, is a production of the Classical Network. Funding for this program is made possible by the listener members of the Classical Network. I'm David Ozenberg, your host. Last week, we had the very rare duo of double bass and harp. This week, we'll opt for a much more common duo and chat with one of the top and most engaging and adventurous flute and guitar duos around, the husband and wife Cavatina duo, flutist Spanish-born American Eugenia Molinaire, and Bosnian-born American guitarist Denis Azabajic. From the minute they met, they've been playing as a duo, and over the course of their careers, they have produced recordings that expand the flute and guitar repertoire, working with labels that can meet them on their creative strata, like Jim Ginsberg and the Chicago-based Sidi Records, or Becky and David Sterabin and the New York-based Bridge Records. The Cavatina duo have made it their credo to engage composers to actively work with them, expanding the repertoire for this common pairing that already has plenty of music composed for it. The Cavatina duo also give new takes on works by established composers, but have also pioneered projects that center on themes that resonate not only with both of their backgrounds and heritage, but open new vistas for all who hear them live, in concert, or on recording. We'll hear a lot of music from the two as duo, but I thought we'd start by hearing them as singular artists. You're listening to Denis here perform Dusan Bogdanovich's Blues and Seven Variations. We'll follow that with Eugenia in the spotlight, along with pianist Rob Bruck and the Romanian composer Georgenescu's Cantabile and Presto for flute and piano. And then before we meet them, I'll give Denis another solo turn, since he has recorded more solo albums than his flute-playing wife, from his recording titled Out of Africa and Around the World, from whence the first piece we heard him play originated. We'll hear Morning Dance from Alan Thomas's suite titled Out of Africa. I spoke with the Cavatina duo via Zoom a couple weeks back. very happy today to be talking with the cavatino duo, flute and guitar, with flutist Eugenia Moliner and guitarist Denis Azarbajic. So last week, I had a duo on called the Rivertown Duo, and that was a duo of double bass and harp, which is really odd. But the two of you form a more common, more frequently encountered duo of flute and guitar, which is great because you have a lot of repertoire and you two have built the repertoire. Very noble on your part. But that also brings the other side of the coin, which means you have to kind of make yourselves stand out from the other flute and guitar duos. And you've done that very well over the years with all your recordings and your commissions and your projects. So just a general congrats on all that. I really appreciate and I'm a fan of what you do. But let's start on putting the duo together, getting you two together. So you are a husband and wife duo, which brings also its good points, I'm sure, and some other points. How did the two of you meet? How did you decide, let's get together and do this? The formation of the two of you into the cavatina.
Well, first of all, thank you for having us on your program and all the things you were telling us about. You know, we started individually, sort of, to speak a little bit. Eugenia came to Netherlands from Spain for the sole purpose of studying flute because it was recommended to her to go there by a very good flutist. And she was just, I'm just going to go and explore and see what's out there. My pathway was a little different because in 1991, the war broke out in former Yugoslavia. So I had some family in the Netherlands and my parents sent me over there to avoid being drafted to the military service because compulsory. And we met at the Rotterdam Conservatory. A common acquaintance introduced us and, you know, well, people often ask us, you know, what came first, the dating or the music? So first came dating, but very soon after we were like, let's play together and started, you know, getting together, practicing, performing. Our first concert was in Eugenia's hometown in Spain, in Boliana.
At the time, we were not thinking to have to establish a duo or anything.
No, not at the time. But then our first record came out, a CD with the opera Tres with a Spanish label. It got the good reviews. And from then on, I think was the first moment when we realized, let's dedicate some serious thought to that. Not that we were not serious in making the CD or anything, but I think this was the first spark to maybe put us on the pathway of, let's consider this something we want to pursue professionally.
So take the other part of the question then, because even back then, you knew that there were a lot of flute and guitar duos around, maybe not with the romance mixed in, but flute and guitar duos. Talk about the thought process of what are we going to play here? What courses are we going to take as we develop this duo, which you decided to stay together at?
So in 1998, when we recorded our first CD, we had already developed a few pieces for our repertoire, you know, just for that CD. That first CD that we recorded, all the pieces are originally written for flute and guitar by non-guitarist composers, like Toru Takemitsu, Astor Piazzolla, Rodrigo, Ruiz Pipo. And we were thinking after the reviews came up, after the CD was out, we were thinking, okay, what do we do now? So we continue in this line, doing music that is originally written for flute and guitar, not transcriptions, not music from mainly the 19th century, which the guitar part is not so substantial. So we wanted to go into that line a little bit, but it was not immediately happening. It took a little bit of time to develop the repertoire, because you have to remember that when we were starting with the duo, Denis was already established as a guitarist and doing a lot of things solo. So he was doing his solo CDs while we were doing the duo. And I also started recording solo. Fortunately, I stopped there. I did only one solo CD. And after we had our son and other things happened, but we had other things besides the duo that were taking our time and our things. But then when we went back to focus on the repertoire of the duo, luckily we met David Leisner and he showed us one of his pieces that at the time hadn't been yet recorded or anything. We loved it. And we proposed to CD Records to do that piece. And he said, okay, why don't you do an entire album of David, which we did. And so from that moment on, we started thinking about projects and ideas. And Jim in CD and David with Bridge, they were both very welcoming from our ideas. And that's how it happened.
So turning to the Cavatina Duo's first big American CD release on the CD label of music by guitarist and composer David Leisner, the CD titled Acrobats, we'll hear two movements from Leisner's suite Dances in the Madhouse, the first movement Tango Solitaire, and the closing movement Samba! Thank you. we've brought the two of you together. So now let's briefly take you apart. Eugenia, you mentioned how you've recorded, Dennis, you've recorded a number of solo CDs. So talk about your solo careers. What are the goals there? What are the aspirations there? Support from your partner. Talk about your careers separately and what you're trying to achieve there outside the duo.
Oh, that's a very interesting question. Eugenia gave you some heads up. I have to go even earlier to sort of like get a listeners a better picture. I started learning to play guitar at a very early age, at the age of 6. Eugenia started later. She was 14, 15 when she started. By the time we met, I played at a certain level. I started going to competitions, and Eugenia was always by my side in those competitions. And I always give her credit that, you know, that was sort of the spark that helped me be successful at the time in those competitions. And so Eugenia is sort of like, I would consider like an artistic engine of the duo, right? And always the inspiration when I would go to the competitions, well, moral, emotional, artistic support, right? So she was my coach, so to speak. So through my competitions and then, you know, winning some competitions and part of the prizes were recordings, that's how I maybe paved our initial way into, you know, in...
But your solo.
Yeah, well, I got some recordings to do, and that was what was happening, helped us with the duo later on. I always had an idea since I was, you know, a teenager or even earlier that I want to play guitar, I want to play concerts, I want to be soloist and so on and so forth. So I did that for a number of years, and duo sort of evolved along with it. And I can't really make a separation of two to say, you know, my solo career, my duo career. I mean, if you really want it, you can make a separation. But deep inside of me, I don't feel it like that way. I just feel it's all music. Whether I do it solo, whether I do it with a duo, whether I do it with our quartet, or whether I play with an orchestra, it's just music making with other people. Yeah, so duo and a solo for me was very much hand in hand, because for many years, again, you know, guitar festivals, guitar societies would hire me to play solo. I would introduce duo. Duo would come and start coming repeatedly, you know, year after year to those festivals as well. So that's why I'm saying it's, for me, it's a, like a very strong symbiotic relation between these two artistic pathways, so to speak. Well, okay, so you said about solo. Then, you know, duo grew even more. It gave me opportunity to collaborate with more people and for us to go even more beyond. I'm very grateful for all my, you know, guitar circles and festivals and colleagues and fans and students and so on. And I love and I enjoyed it. But it was also very nice to see the other part of exploring performance career in, you know, like music societies, anything not related to guitar, and to see that contrast of response from the audience, you know, when perhaps they are not so mesmerized by your technical skills as a guitarist because they recognize in themselves, but just the sheer artistic part of it. And one of the most beautiful moments that I witnessed is when we performed in my hometown after the end of the war. That would have been 99 that we played. And then one lady came and said, you know, for an hour and a half, we forgot about all the horrors we had while we were listening to your concert. So it's just simply for me, really, on personal level, it boils down to, you know, you communicate some human dimension through your instrument, and it happened to be guitar, and then it happens to be solo, and then it happens to be duo. And, you know, there's a certain energy that transcends all that for me.
Well, I'm just wondering, because if you're both very accomplished musicians, you know, you do recordings or you even do recitals, solo recitals, and then you have the duo. I mean, in normal times, there's only so many dates in the year, so many concerts you can do, and just that balance between doing solo engagements, doing the duo, adding other musicians.
And we have done during the normal times for years. Here in Chicago, I played a lot chamber music with musicians from the area, from Chicago Symphony, from Lyric, from many other ensembles. And I enjoy doing that very much. As I said, I recorded a CD with a pianist, my pianist from the Netherlands. And for me, being involved doing all this chamber music and doing the recordings plus doing the concerts with the duo has been full time. You know, right. I also teach and I'm a mother. So I have not pursued a lot continuing with my solo because I thought that playing with the duo was already my solo. That was already doing a lot, you know, and right. I have recorded 10 CDs, which is it's quite a bit. And I'm very proud of the work we have done as a duo. So right now I have a manager who is telling me, so are you going to be doing something solo? anytime soon, you know? Right. And I just recorded with Dennis the 12 Telemann's Fantasies, which are a staple of the flute repertoire. So I am like, okay, so what do you want me to do? I of course, there are so many things you can record, but I am taking the things as I feel connected with them, and I don't do the things because I just want to, you know, as Dennis said, I don't want to expand my solo, or I just want to make music.
Well, right. Also in a few of our duo CDs, you know, the element of flute is, or flute repertoire, solo flute repertoire is very much featured. What you're saying about latest CD about Telemann, Marine Marais, right? That right. Those are also things that are featured on a, well, let's call it solo flute recital. If it is solo flute recital, you always need to have accompaniment. Telemann is solo, the Marais would be with accompaniment. And in this case, it's with guitar. Or all our Cavatina di Opera CD, I mean, mm-hmm. which features like, you know, right. the staples of flute repertoire, the only thing was arranged for guitar, so.
Turning to the CD the Cavatina duo put out on the Bridge label, Cavatina at the Opera, containing very popular fantasies, potpourris, variations, etc., common in the 19th century, all based on well-known tunes from well-known operas, we'll hear them perform the fantasy on themes from Verdi's La Traviata by the 19th century Italian virtuoso flutist and composer Giulio Bricchialdi, arranged here for flute and guitar by Alan Thomas.
Thank you. Well, I think what makes you guys fascinating is you've already mentioned how the first CD was kind of this, well, the first American CD, music of David Leisner. So you've always had this connection to living composers expanding the repertoire or showcasing the new repertoire for flute and guitar. There's the Astor Piazzolla CD. You just mentioned the CD of the 19th century kind of idea of the opera, potboy, or the potpourri, the fantasy, the variations. But mixed in all those CDs, there's always these nuggets, these gems, these new arrangements, new adaptations. And so there's this real kind of identity of you guys where you're going to get a recording. It might be based on a theme, based on the works of a composer, but you're going to discover something. And that means you're consciously making decisions of keep pushing the two of you forward, learning new repertoire, programming inventively. I mean, this is all part of your makeup. I just comment on that because that's a conscious decision. You could easily just settle in and do a ton of flute and guitar repertoire that's very well established and be happy ever after, but you haven't done that, so.
No.
That's true. And I think it's, in a sense, an evolution process. We started, as Eugenia mentioned, with our first CD with idea, you know, fresh out of college or conservatory. We are going to be purists, that we are going to record original works written for flute guitar, and we're going to stick to that. You know, if there's too many arrangements. But later on, we just realized, as I guess, as you mature, that, you know, music is music. It doesn't really matter what is it written for, you know, and right. Composers are happy to hear their music in a different forms and shapes and instruments and so on. And also one of our greatest influence and I would say a mentor is Sergio Assad, a famous guitarist from the Assad Duo, who himself, I remember clearly, you know, he's also a friend and we've met on a number of occasions many years ago. I don't even remember how long ago, but he's guys, why don't you explore the music from your parts of the world?
Right.
And thus, you know, one of our CD features the music from the Balkans, you know, Balkan project. And another one, when Eugenia was thinking like, what about Spain? And didn't want to go to, you know, typical Spanish national music.
Well, hold that thought. I want to go to three projects of yours.
Okay.
Good advice from Sergio, by the way. And the first one is this CD, which is a few years old, but I mean, this had to start from you, Dennis, I guess, and that's the Balkan project. I mean, just talk about that because it's such a discovery CD of folk song-based or song-based, dance-based, yet the range of composers you've engaged on that CD certainly is not just from the region where you grew up. So, I mean, talk about the Balkan project a bit.
Well, ever since we worked with David, so I just need to go back to a prior project, right? And just to show you, you are talking about us, but Cavatina Duo does not live in isolation. It lives as a, you know, let's say an organism that's connected to other people. So David Leisner also was a significant, I think at the first festival when we met him in Florida, when Eugenia said that he introduced us to his piece. But I remember a conversation that we had and Eugenia was telling David, I want to play repertoire with piano. I want to play solo flute concerts. And he was like, yeah, but whether you play with the piano or guitar is the same. You're still playing music. And it really stuck to me, like, you know, music is music. So then we are going to Sergio Assad. And why I'm talking about this is because you have mentors, you have people who are older than you, who, you know, recognize maybe your talent and energy. And they give you such a nice advice. And you take it because they are wiser and you explore that, right? So many, many thanks to everybody, and even those who we don't mention in this interview, you know, we are grateful to so many people that helped us become who we are.
Another thing that happened during this time is that we discovered that collaborating with living musicians is an incredible experience.
Yeah.
What does that mean? You commission something, you have this idea, and when they send you the rough music, not yet, you know, finished, you start listening on the MIDI or just looking at the score, and then you can interact with them and tell them, you know, why don't we do this here? That is something that is almost like a dream come true. Can you imagine that you could talk to Bach or to Telemann and tell them, you know, maybe we could, what do you think, Mr. Herr Telemann? Do you think we could add here a part that it wasn't, you know? So to do that real time with live composers that are open to that, it's an incredible experience. And that kind of hooked us into doing that. So we started with the Balkan project with 9 different composers. 9.
Well, true. Actually, I think we had maybe few more that we have commissioned.
Yeah.
Right. And I'll make a distinction here that 9 of them were left on the CD because we always wanted to have like back and forth with the composers, not from a, let's say, dictatorial standpoint of, you know, we want this kind of piece and you have to write something like that. No, but what I'm getting at is that there were few instances where our communication with composer or our feedback to the composers wasn't taken into account. It was more like, right, you know, I wrote this, this is the way it is, right? Where most of the composers that now these days that we work with, they crave the input from the performer.
Yeah.
You know, what do you think? How the, is this going to work? Is this good? What right. do you think of this? Right. So, you know, piece sort of like evolved from the first draft to the sort of like the final stage where it is. So with the Balkan project, I think maybe we had even 11 people that we commissioned. And why we commissioned those people is because their work crossed our paths at one point or another. Yeah. So we contacted them. And also what we very much like from commissions and working with composers is if we like somebody's composition style, language, flavor, we come up with idea or we adopt idea from people who perhaps suggest us. We think about it, explore, and then we ask the composers to write a pieces on it using their own flavor or ways to, right. to do it. You know, so you start from one starting point, but then we give them much of a liberty to do it.
Yeah.
Then the next step is this sort of like collaboration. What do you think? Does this work? Does that work? But, you know, one case in point, as you said, you know, these folklore pieces, very often those are songs that are very, you know, cyclical, repetitive. So if the song is instrumental part is in the shape of song, it just becomes too many repeats without any well, change. Right. From a performer standpoint, from our experience, we give that feedback and it's not taken into account, then it's like, okay, then we cannot move on from this point.
But luckily, most of the composers...
But most of the composers... I'm saying this just to dispel a little bit, you know, classical upbringing from, you know, you take the score and you have to respect every note that the composer wrote because it's, you know, sacrilege if you change it. And more what we are seeing from composers is like, no, change that. No, that you don't have to do that. You know, how would you do that? Okay, then do it that way, you know. Yes.
Which happened centuries ago. We just don't have the documentation that it
happened. Exactly.
Yeah, and I think the last point in the Balkan project, which then carries into other projects, is when you look at the name, I mean, this is all source repertoire, which, you know, Dennis, this is from the area you grew up in, whether it's a song or a dance. This is all difficult stuff, all those strange meters and some of the scales and all stuff. Yet you
tell me about that.
You engage these composers who are not from that area. This is not their background, whether it's, you know, Alan Thomas or people like this, or past Cadenza guest and good friend of the station, Clarissa Saad, you know, people like this. So when you look at the CD, it's not just a showcase of arranged folk songs and dances from the Balkans. It's their own input, is what I'm saying, into these pieces and into this idiom and into this culture and heritage. So that was fascinating.
I appreciate your take on it. And, you know, in the program notes, written by Vojislav Ivanov, who was my former teacher from the former Yugoslavia. He actually put it that this became more than arrangements of the songs, it became like impressions on the theme.
Yeah, and as you listen to it, you know, sometimes those folk song arrangement CDs, just, you know, by the 16th track, you're like, okay, fine, you know. But this is not the case at all. Each one is an input of the composer that you've engaged to engage the material that is centuries old or, you know, in the folk tradition.
And we're going to finish my chat with the cavatino duo, Eugenia Molinaire, flute, and her husband, Denis Azabajic, guitar, next week. And you can find out more about the cavatina duo at their website, cavatina, C-A-V-A-T-I-N-A, cavatinaduo.com. And the recordings are either on the CD Records label at CEDI, C-E-D-I-L-L-E, cedirecords.org, or Bridge Records at bridgerecords.com. Both labels are also distributed by Naxos. Check them out at naxos.com. Next week's program will begin with their next project, Sephardic Journey, and one of the most amazing stories of generational discovery and inspiration I've ever heard. But I'll close out this week's part one with dipping into their CD, The Balkan Project, released on CD Records, and we'll hear three selections, the closing movement from Miroslav Tadic's Four Macedonian Pieces, this with the title Pajduška, a dance, then Matthew Dunn's setting of a Macedonian song,
Eleno Checo Eleno. And finally, music of Pascadenza guest Clarissa Assad, her version of a Bulgarian dance, Rachanitsa, all performed by my guests today, the Cavatina Duo. As always, I'm glad you're in the audience today. Remember, the conclusion of my chat with the Cavatina Duo will be on next week's program, and I hope you'll join me here each week for a chat with the great classical musicians of our area and the globe. Remember, you can catch any recent past Cadenza program by going to wwfm.org and clicking on Classical and then Webcasts. I ask you to please support this and the many specialty programs we offer by making your donation today at our website. Thank you, and thanks for listening. I'm David Ozenberg, and this has been the award-winning Cadenza, an exclusive production of the Classical Network and wwfm.org.